This is fun! The FU Network!
I'm Stephen Kerzner. Welcome to the No Bullpen, another one of our Election 2019 edition specials. We are days away. Oh, thank whatever deity or non-deity you believe in. We are only days away from this election being over. Or are we? That's part of the topic tonight, because with the results, the poll results being so neck and neck, there are a couple of different scenarios which may play out Monday night. Now, the polls may wind up being completely wrong. People don't always tell the truth to pollsters. Often pollsters manage to find people who have a landline and who have time to talk to them. And so it skews polls all the time. We saw in the United States in the last election, there were more people voting for Trump than were willing to admit they were voting for Trump to anybody else. And so the polls were a little skewed. We've seen that in Canada, in various provinces. You can't always trust polls, but we're going to say, for the purpose of this show, that the polls show the conservatives and the liberals neck and neck. Literally every day, if you watch the poll tracker or the 338, you'll see a little bit of advantage here and a little bit of a loss, and the next day it reverses itself. And that opens up the doors to some very interesting things politically and governmentally. Some stuff depending on how old you are amongst our listeners, you may never have encountered before. And so we're going to talk about that. But first, let's meet our panel. The host, creator of a very popular series on our FU Politics, Ishat Reza, please tell us you've got such a long resume. It's so impressive. It would take the whole show to go through all of it, but give us the highlights.
Okay, I won't bore you guys. I'm Ishat Reza, and I'm the host of Matter of Fact, co-host, which is the political podcast on the FU Politics Network. I am also a lawyer and a public governance advisor. I used to work in the federal government, and I've also worked at the OECD in Paris in public governance.
Okay. And I think you also went to Harvard, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Look at that. Just drop that. Let's just bury the lead there. Ishat, you've been called upon by our national broadcaster CBC to talk about political events during this election. And it's always great to see you there. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Stuart Benson is a self-described leftist dirtbag. and as I've said before, he's joined many of our podcasts. I've seen the leftist in Stuart. I've yet to see the dirtbag, but maybe that'll come out today.
Smell me over the computer. So
well, I thought you were meaning metaphorically, as opposed to you were actually sitting in your own filth. Stuart is also a journalist and I believe an editor as well.
Yes, I was a editor of the Algonquin Times and Glue Magazine, two of our student publications here in Ottawa for Algonquin College. We actually just won second place, not first, but we got second place for best student story for our FOIA, Freedom of Information Request story about the very ill-fated Saudi Arabia campus that Algonquin College tried to do, an all-male campus in Saudi Arabia. So that was a fun story to do. College was not happy with us after that, but it's a fun story, right?
Sometimes it's good to be. Sometimes it's good when the authorities aren't happy. You'll always see. John Craig, from John Craig and through Stephen Harper, prime ministers and governments always feel the CBC is against them. And that's because they report stuff that people in authority don't want reported. And so they're against them. So liberal, conservative governments have always complained about that. Stuart, thank you for joining us. New panelist joining us today. Very interesting individual, Steve Cole. And let me just tell you how Steve Cole introduced himself to me in an email when I was looking for people who have more of a conservative bent. you said, first of all, welcome, Steve.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're a person who's voted both liberal and conservative. You fit a lot of the conservative stereotypes. You're an Albertan. You own a little trucking company that is oil field based. You drive a pickup truck. You ride a dirt bike. You have a wife, two kids, one cat and two dogs. However, you don't want to be American. You don't like Trump. You're not a racist or homophobic. You're pro-cannabis and pro-choice, and you don't live in a conservative echo chamber. But nonetheless, you do live in a province that is, I mean, by osmosis, you're conservative in Alberta, whether you are or you're not. Yep. So you will have perspectives on this that are probably different than the perspectives that the other three of us share. And we do want to hear that. We do want to hear from all sides. So we've got a neck and neck election. The conservatives decided early on, rather cannily, I imagine, that a conservative party, which usually usually campaigns on its economic platforms, found that, well, they really couldn't go into this election complaining about the economic performance of the Trudeau government because it's been very good. The economy's doing well. Unemployment is low. People being risen out of poverty. They knew they couldn't pound the facts on that. So they pounded the table instead and turned it into a referendum on Justin Trudeau. Continued a campaign of mistruths, half truths, and absolute lies to just make people terribly confused about who this man Trudeau was, and make people feel a little suspicious and maybe just feel a little sick of the entire process, and maybe make some liberal voters who were more sensitive not show up at the polls. It's a great strategy. It's not one that I think is particularly moral or humane, but it seems to have worked. So now we have a neck and neck race where, quite frankly, based just on economic data, the liberals should have had this in a cakewalk. Now that we've got this situation where either the Liberals or the Conservatives could form a minority government, or could, I should say, could get enough seats on Monday to be in a position to form a minority government, it opens up some doors and some possibilities that we've not faced before. Ishat, why don't you tell us about what some of the options are? Let's just say the conservatives win a small number of seats more than the Liberals. Or if the Liberals win a small number of seats more than the Conservatives, what can happen? What scenarios are we facing when we're dealing with a race this close?
Yeah, so what you're talking about is essentially if we're in the minority territory. So none of the parties reach that 170 seat threshold that would push them into a majority mandate. Now, that's not impossible on Monday. I think it would, if it did happen, it would probably be more the Liberals, just given the way that the seats are working out so far, from, you know, based on the polling in the different provinces and so on. But as you say, it's also very possible and maybe even probable that we're going to be more in the minority territory. So if we do have a situation where, say, the CPC has just a couple of more seats than the LPC, but hasn't reached that 170 threshold, then what happens on October 22nd is Trudeau is still prime minister because he remains as PM until he resigns or is dismissed. And by constitutional convention, the government is the one that holds the confidence of the elected house. So unless Trudeau decides that, you know what, CPC, you have a few more seats than I do, you haven't reached a majority, but I'm going to resign now, so unless he does that, he will still be prime minister. And what I suspect would happen then is that they would then go before the house and see if, you know, they can hold the confidence of the house. And that would mean requiring some kind of negotiations with the NDP, possibly the Greens. I mean, I doubt it with the Bloc, but, you know, like he would need to then get some of the other parties on board. So that's essentially what would happen. If the LPC gets more votes, more seats than the CPC in a minority situation, still the same thing would
we've experienced that before, where the party that's in power gets reelected, but with a smaller plurality of seats, And in that case, we understand that you got the most number of seats, even if it's not as many as you got before, even if it's not a majority. So you get to form the government. But there's also a situation possible where the Conservatives wind up with a small number of seats more than the Liberals. What happens then?
Exactly. And that's sort of the scenario I was saying, that the PM, Trudeau, is still PM on the next day. It's only if he resigns and says, okay, fine, you guys can take it, which I doubt he would, that then the Conservatives would form minority government. I think more likely than not is that the Liberals would then try to negotiate some kind of a deal, likely with the NDP and possibly with the Greens as well, but, you know, probably be the NDP. That could help prop them up, and maybe it would be a formal coalition or maybe not a formal coalition, but essentially the Liberals would have to hold the confidence of the House.
That's right. So, I mean, we've had situations, minority situations recently, in recent history. Paul Martin had a minority, and he, rather than forming an official coalition, he just sort of shopped party to party, issue by issue, for legislation. Stephen Harper had a minority for 6 years, where he did pretty much the same thing. There was no official coalition, no official agreement, but sort of shopped party to party based on the legislation to see if he could get enough votes to pass it. But I suspect that most people think that if the Conservative Party on Monday night comes out with more seats than the Liberals, that most Canadians expect that means that the Conservative Party are the people that rightfully should be asked to form the government. And this is sort of tradition, it's custom, it's what we've done, but constitutionally, that doesn't have to happen. And Trudeau could very well say, yes, you got a few more seats than me, but if the Governor General, first of all, in her role, looks and sees the Conservatives, sees how many seats they got, and it's a really slim minority, and determines that they probably can't govern. They probably will not be able to hold the confidence of the House because the other parties won't prop them up. It's entirely possible the Governor General could say, no, I'm going to ask the current government, the current Prime Minister, to form a government. But that'll make a lot of people really pissed off because people don't know their constitutional history. They don't really know much about their Canadian history. And so I think if we're in a situation where the Conservatives seem to have won a minority government by taking a plurality of seats, but not a lot, yet they're not asked to form a government. And Trudeau says, no, I'm still Prime Minister and I'm going to continue to be Prime Minister, and I'm going to form an agreement with these other parties, or I'm going to continue to be Prime Minister and hold the confidence of the House by being supported by these other parties. I think we're going to see some people very confused. I think we'll see Liberals pretty happy, but I think we'll see non-aligned people confused, and I think we'll see Conservatives very angry. Steve Cole, as somebody from a Conservative background, you wake up Tuesday morning, you find out that the Conservative Party has won more seats than the Liberal Party, yet they are not going to be asked to form the government. How do you feel?
I'm confused. Is this where the electoral reform and all that stuff was talked about to kind of change the system to get something that works a little better, like with the minority government situation?
Well, actually, this would need to be constitutional reform to change this. Electoral reform would be how we arrived at the results that we arrive at, not about constitutional things like this.
This was constitutional convention. Like, it's always been in place. It's nothing that anyone changed in recent times. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, in our system of government, the idea that, you know, the party with the most seats usually governs is a custom, and it's what's traditionally been done. But officially in terms of the way the law is, the way that the constitutional conventions have been. It's really the government that holds the confidence of the elected House that will continue, and it's the PM, who's currently the Prime Minister, is the one who kind of will still be PM until he resigns or is dismissed. Now, the other thing that could happen is that if the CPC aligns themselves in a so-called coalition with the Bloc, and they reach, say, a majority threshold, then, you know, this issue doesn't, you know, unfold the way that I've described. But if they don't, then I think it could still be a bit complicated. But that's another wrinkle in there too. I mean, I don't know if the Bloc, I've read things both ways, that either, yes, they will work with the Conservatives, you know, if they need to, or no, they won't. I mean, I've seen both. I don't know if you guys have a better sense of
exactly where they stand. No leader is going to right now come right out and say, yes, I absolutely will form a coalition, because it's going to affect their own vote count. It's going to affect the way people vote. So they're all very cagey about whether they're open to a
votes.
Coalition. But Steve, you're confused. You know, you wake up, you find out that the Conservatives have won what is traditionally considered a minority government victory, and yet the Liberals are still the government of the land, and it's legal and it's constitutional. Knowing that it's legal and constitutional, how do you feel as a Canadian? Do you feel that it's right? Do you feel that it's cheating? How do you feel when you find out?
Well, I mean, most people, I mean, I know we have a panelist on here that went to Harvard. You know, I have a Harvard t-shirt, but I'm running on about a grade 12 education here. I did score very high in my first aid class last time I took it. I will say that, but.
but that's important. That's what we want to know. Steve, that's
Joe
what
average.
We want to know.
Then this is what I'm saying. As Joe Average, it totally feels unfair, right? People are going to wake up the next morning and be like, well, if the party I voted for won the most seats, but we're not in power, like, what just happened? Like, what? That doesn't make sense, I guess, in a way. And it is going to confuse a lot of people, because most people are, you know, pretty average and are just, like, I think this election has been more than any other election. I think people are paying more attention now, and maybe that's more of a social media thing, and with Twitter and everything else, it's easier to pay attention now than it was years ago. But man, like, it's, yeah, there's a lot of people that are misinformed with the way the system works and stuff like that, and people really do have to have it explained to them in a simple manner for them to understand what's going on, because I had no idea that could happen until just now. I had no idea that is one of the scenarios that can happen.
Okay,
but it seems like minority governments, like, it's hard for them to get anything done, right? Because it's, you gotta. But maybe is that better, that you have to work together with some of the
other parties? Well, that's a whole other question. Some minority governments have done some great things for this country. Some minority governments have been terrible and fall apart in 6 months, like Joe Clark's did way back when he was prime minister briefly. But you would feel, as somebody with maybe it has nothing to do with your conservative background, you would just feel as a Canadian that something's amiss here.
I think anybody would feel that, especially if it was the party that you voted for, and you know, and they won the most seats, but because of the way that the system is set up, that you're still not in power. I mean, there's going to be some pissed off people that, you know, after that election, if that's the way it works out.
Okay, now Stuart, do you think that it would be possible in this scenario to educate the public about the Constitution at the same time as conservative partisans are yelling and screaming that the election's been stolen?
I don't know. If only there was some sort of like organization or group of people whose job it was to inform the public of like things that are going on in their country and how their government works, like something like journalism, maybe. Every time I've seen like a journalist try to explain what coalition government is, it's always with this tone that it's some sort of like Machiavellian, like gaming the system sort of thing. But it's not. It's just like the parliamentary system at its simplest is who has the most guys on their team, men or guys or girls, guys or gals. It's 20
guys is, it has been accepted as a unisex term generally.
Yes.
So don't worry about that.
Whoever has the most folks on their side.
Okay.
And to your points, Steve C, I have to specify, when you said, like, if you wake up on election day and the conservatives have the most seats, but they're not in power. Well, they have the, I guess, plurality of the seats, but because we have that, that's like, there's this many seats in the House and you have to have, I think it's what, 170 to have a majority. So if you have 170 seats, yeah, you have the most seats in the House, so you are automatically in power. But if you have anything less than that, then the rest of the House, there's more people not on your side than on your side.
Okay,
so those guys, if they want
which
to...
which is a great diversion, but the question I asked you is, do you think that Canadians would be willing... I mean, let's just say there is something called the media that tries to inform the public that, hey, this is all constitutional, and it's okay that the Liberals didn't win the most number of seats, but are being allowed to continue to be the government. Do you think that the public will be open with, when you consider how the waters have been muddied about facts during this entire election campaign, do you think that A, that information would even get out there, and B, do you think that the, okay, we know the conservative voters will not accept it, but do you think that non-aligned voters will see the, see this as fair and legal and just, or will they see this as, regardless of it being constitutional, it just seems like somehow it's just not fair, and Canadians are very fair-minded people. Do you think that this that we'd have the opportunity to educate enough Canadians for them to be okay with that situation?
I definitely think you could get to the point where people would could understand our system enough that they are okay with that. I don't think you could do it by Monday. And especially like just setting the precedent of any other election where this possibility is brought up and what the ramifications were after the election. I don't think people are going to be okay if the Conservatives win the minority and the Liberals end up forming government with a, like, say, Green Party NDP coalition, or even if just it's one, the Liberal NDP coalition.
Well, if you remember,
that will be palatable to most Canadians.
If you remember when Stephen Harper almost lost government, when and there was a formal coalition with when Stéphane Dion was the head of the Liberals with other parties, he prorogued Parliament to prevent it from happening. But people felt at the time that even though this was explained to them to be legal and constitutional, they just felt that it was dirty pool. Isha, what are your thoughts?
I think so. I think in Canada, because we don't have the experience with it, that it is going to be perceived in that way. In part, there is an educational component, but I think also, you know, we can point to examples in other parts of the world. I mean, coalition governments are pretty common in Europe, for example, and not that they're necessarily better. You know, they tend to be shorter in length, and, you know, sometimes they're not very functional because you need to have consensus across party lines, which can be very difficult. So I think, you know, it will be a test. In fact, I mean, you know, there's a part of me that's kind of interested for that to be the outcome, because I'm curious to see how things would unfold. We've not really experimented with it in any significant way. I mean, the Dion experiment fell apart, from what I understand. Actually, in the Zodcast, Neil had interviewed Marlene Jennings, who at the time was involved in those discussions in negotiating that coalition agreement with, I believe it was the NDP, Jack
Layton.
Yeah, I think Jack Layton.
Yeah.
And then I think what hurt them was because Dion had also had some discussions with the Bloc, and he invited the Bloc guy up onto stage or something like that, and then of course everyone was like, what, they're the separatists, like, what are you doing? And I don't know, like, I mean, there was just some, it was just poorly done, I think, the way that that unfolded. But it could have worked, and you know, I think subsequently here it could potentially work as well. It just, you know, it'll just depend on the willingness of the parties involved to do it. Now, in terms of whether conservatives would feel you know, whether they've been the election's been stolen, I mean, certainly that could be a sentiment. But if in the end you end up with a majority of seats with a coalition, I think it would be hard to really credibly keep making that argument, because if you reach that 170 threshold, and if it is between two parties, you know, so be it. I mean, we don't have anything that's requiring us to be part of a party. People cross party floor, you know, the floor all the time. People become independents, you know, like we don't have to be in the way that we started out at the election. So I think, you know, there might be some people who aren't happy with it, but could accept it just because it is legitimate. I mean, these are elected people.
Okay. I mean, it comes down to the governor general has a tremendous amount of latitude. The governor general is the person that will make the decision really as far as who she asks to form the government. Most of the time we expect that whoever gets the most number of seats is the party that is first asked to form a government. But constitutionally, that's not required. It is not required of the governor general to ask the party that has the most number of seats in a minority situation to be the first ones to form a government, to see if they can form a government and get the confidence of the House. That's not necessary. It's what our tradition has been, but it's not necessary. And I'm just wondering, we're not at an age now where education and enlightenment is something that is really prized. We're at an age now where Steve mentioned earlier the internet and people being more, I think people are more engaged. I don't think they're more informed. And we've got to come to a place where people just, they don't want to be educated. They know what they know. They want to believe what they believe. And they want to believe what they're told by people that they want to believe. And so it doesn't matter if this is constitutional. Could a government that, if the conservatives get slightly more seats and are able, you know, mathematically a minority government, but aren't the first people asked to form the government, do you think that the government, the Liberal government, if they do a la carte issue by issue with dealing with the NDP or with the Greens, for example, do you think that they would be seen as the legitimate government of Canada, or would they be seen as the party that just refused to let go of power and was an illegitimate, illegitimate entity? What do you think, Steve?
Well, just from the Joe average view of it and a common sense view of it, it's. Like if you can form a coalition government and then you give the Greens get this extra power, or NDP get this extra power to form a coalition with the Liberals, or even if the Bloc got to form a coalition with the Conservatives, it's not a great system in my eyes. It's like, so these parties that only got a few seats are getting way too much power handed to them to be able to form these coalitions. Like for us, I live in Alberta. Like if this turns into a Liberal minority and they're teaming up with the Greens on some of their policies. I mean, Elizabeth May wants to shut down the oil field out here, right? And there's a lot of good, hardworking people out here that are just out here trying to earn a living to supply a product that's kind of been needed for the last however many years with all these airplanes and cars and everything going around. And yeah, hey, we're all, don't just think that the conservative voters and people in Alberta, like, don't want the planet to be healthy and stuff like that, because we do. And if you ever came out to one of our work sites and stuff and saw how we do things, our safety and our environmental levels and our policies that we use out here are very high. Like if my company, for instance, if we spill one drop on the ground, it's a reportable spill and we have to clean it up, and we do clean it up. So it's
okay. So Albertans in the oil industry do care about the environment, but you
absolutely
think that
she has said she'll shut down, literally shut Fort McMurray down in the oil sands by 2030.
She can say anything she wants. She would not be in a position to get the smaller parties wouldn't be in a position really realistically.
But you know what I'm saying is you're giving more power to these people that
something like that to happen. But if you don't like this, that's the system, Steve. That's the way it's always worked. And so if you don't like the system, you don't like the system, and that's legitimate. You're allowed that opinion, but that's the way that it works. But apart from your concerns about the Green Party, would you feel that the government was legitimate if they weren't the, if the party that's in power, in lead of the government, wasn't the one that earned the most number of seats?
Yeah, I mean, that's again, it feels unfair, but I mean, that's the system. That's the system that we all live under in this country, right? So
okay, so you'd be willing to accept that it is constitutional, it is legal, and even though there would be partisans...
Well, if those are the laws, we all have to accept it, don't we? Like, what's anybody going to do about it?
Okay, I mean, okay, all right. So that you don't think tradition should trump the facts of constitutional law that govern us?
I just think that I mean, we got our laws, we got whatever, like you're saying, there's sometimes guys will step down. They'll step down if they don't.
Well, it's sort of, I mean, we've not really faced it in any way recently. I mean, it's been mostly, if there's been a minority, it's been because they did win the most seats. And so, you know, hopefully if that's what happens, then we will avoid any of these scenarios where people might consider the government to be illegitimate in a coalition form, right? So that, I mean, I think actually what Steve C is bringing up actually does raise the possibility that, you know, there might be some protests. I mean, there might be people who, you know, would think just it's unfair, which I can understand, right? That it's unfair that would be how things would unfold. And, you know, maybe it would cause a bit of unrest. Who knows? I mean, best case scenario, or at least the most stable scenario, would either be a majority or the party that gets the most seats will form a minority. In that case, you know, those are scenarios we've had before, and no one's going to contest or say that this is not legitimate. But in the other scenario, yeah, in the coalition case, it is going to be a big test to see whether people can accept that.
Especially at a time now where we're all just divided into these camps, and anger seems to be the rule of the day rather than reason. Stuart, would you accept a Liberal government that got a few less seats, a few fewer seats than the Conservatives, but maintained themselves as government working with other parties? Would you accept that as a legitimate government that is representing the will of the people? Or would, well, I shouldn't give you an or. Just answer that question.
Well, I do believe, like, I would accept it, because if you're in a coalition government and you have the most seats, then you are representing the will of the people. To assuage a little bit of Steve C's fears on this, I don't think it has any workability. I think if there's a conservative minority, I think they will end up governing. I don't think the Liberals and the NDP would be able to work out a coalition together. I know there's been a lot, like,
you got to be kidding. Why do you think that? Why? What makes you think that two parties that diametrically oppose what the Conservatives stand for and are running so that they can be government? What makes you think that they would rather let the Conservatives be government than agree to work with each other?
I don't, because of the way that most NDP supporters, at least that I've noticed, view Justin Trudeau, I don't think they would accept Jagmeet Singh, the NDP, propping up the Liberal government. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before, but as like just taking
I think you're wrong
from
now.
The way, yeah, well, I think just
add
going
this
off
one.
The way the NDP and the Greens jumped in on the Liberals with the Conservatives during the SNC-Lavalin sort of scandal. I don't think the NDP.
This is a different situation, though.
But
I mean, you think about it.
You just said with all this like tribalism and stuff, and people like retreating to their own corners. I don't think they can work. I don't think at this point
they would work
together.
Just,
I think they will try it. And if they do, I don't think it'll be very strong, but
but you started out by saying you don't think that the Liberals and the NDP would agree to work together, but, and yes, we are tribalists and we've become more tribal, but when you consider there's more commonality in values between the Liberals and the NDP than there is between either of those parties and the Conservatives. I would think that even if NDP supporters were disappointed that the Liberals wound up being the government, they'd be more upset if the Conservatives were the government, because then any progressive policies would be deep sixed or regressed for the next at least 4 years. So don't
you
think
that's a very rational?
Yeah. Well,
go ahead, Ishat.
That's a really rational line of thinking. But I think maybe what Stuart's getting at is that maybe people won't be thinking quite so rationally. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, right? Like some people who, just have this real knee-jerk reaction of, oh, we really hate Trudeau, may not buy into it, even on the progressive side. But at the same time, the flip side of that argument is there's a very strong incentive after the election that if you want your policies to be put through, both from the perspective of the Liberals and the NDP and possibly the Greens, that there's that strong incentive to work together to make that happen. So I see that argument too. Who knows where people will land? Stuart, I don't know what your preference on that front is. But for me, I would prefer that. I would prefer for them to work together to put forward, and continue on the policies that have already started.
Okay.
Well, I don't have a preference, but my prediction is a slight Liberal minority. And if there's a Conservative majority minority that they will squeak through into governing. But I think the likelihood is there's going to be a slight Liberal majority.
Okay. Steve,
minority. Sorry.
Steve, you're hearing all this and it's blowing your mind, isn't it? The fact that all of this is legal and possible because we don't have a tradition. We don't have experience with coalition governments really in this country. We do, but not on the federal level, and not in these kinds of circumstances. It's usually the perception is, I think amongst most people, you win the most amount of seats, you're the ones that get to vote until you lose the confidence of the House. And now, is this blowing your mind, the notion that a party can win the most number of seats but not wind up being the actual government?
Yeah, I mean, everything I've learned from politics is from watching CBC News and listening to you guys, really. So it's like, what we've seen, we've never seen that in the past, and not in my lifetime anyways. Have we ever seen that in the past in Canada?
No. I don't know. Ishat, you're probably more of a historian than I am.
No, I mean, I'm not aware. I can't say definitively, but nothing at least not in the last 30 years or 40 years that I can think of. I mean, really, coalition governments is not new, is not something that we understand in Canada. It's not something we have experience with. It would be uncharted territory.
Right. I'm only going by what we've seen in the past. Right. And everybody, it's gotten so bad on Twitter. Is Twitter not just a nightmare right now? Like, is Twitter not just absolute chaos with the mudslinging back and forth with everybody and stuff? I mean, at the end of the day, I think people need to realize that we're all a lot more similar than maybe everybody thinks we are, especially on the social media. Like, Western Canadians aren't that much different than Eastern Canadians and stuff like that. But it's such a big country that it's like, you guys are seeing a great economy out there and I hear things are great out there and stuff. And like, that's not what we're seeing in Alberta, right? It's a train wreck out here. Like, there are empty buildings around us and people out of work. And
you know what? And it's sad and it's unfortunate that we can't control the global price of oil. And it's unfortunate that the province built their entire economy on basically one industry. But nonetheless, those are mistakes made by people in the past. I feel bad for people.
But see, those are talking points. Those are talking points. This is the resource that we've provided for this country.
Yeah, our country built its economy on that province having that one resource.
Exactly.
As its
Canada.
Main economy. So we didn't. It's not exactly like that happened in a vacuum.
No, but you know what? There's other places. There's other jurisdictions where the local. I mean, look at Oshawa in Ontario, which was really the auto manufacturing capital with Windsor of Canada. Oshawa started to see plants close, and now Oshawa has switched from being auto parts and auto manufacturing to education and nursing, I believe, are their key industries. There's other countries, other jurisdictions, other places where when your key industry that you've relied on for years no longer seems to have a future, you start to switch to some other options and start to look for some other options. And I don't think that that's what we're seeing with the current Alberta government. Sorry, yes, go on.
Well, just people are a little misinformed, but yes, the price of oil did crash in about 2014, 2015, but about 2-3 years ago, the price recovered to the point where every other oil jurisdiction on the planet has been booming, and it didn't come back to Canada. And that's directly linked to the pipelines that were essentially kiboshed with some of the moves that the governments have made, NDP in Alberta and the Liberals.
Also, I think it has something to do with the fact that there's countries that don't want our oil because it comes from the tar sands, and they consider it to be dirty oil and bad for the environment. So there's some difficulty in selling some of that oil that we're pulling out of the tar sands.
Saudis have a much cleaner source.
If you guys want to a little bit of a history, I just Googled while you guys were debating the oil industry issue here. So we have had coalition experience in Canada, but not recently. The Great Coalition was formed in 1864, which I guess was pre-Canada, really. But then there was one in 1919 in Ontario, and that continued until 1923. So we've had some experience, but it's been a while.
Yeah, so I just think that to Steve's earlier point about Twitter and about what it's like out there now, and I just wonder if we're setting Canada up right now, if the Liberals do not win a minority government and the Conservatives win the most number of seats but are not asked to form the government, I think we're setting up a situation of a Canada that is divided as never before, rancorous as never before, that could very much unravel, at least for the time being, the fabric of who we are as Canadians and who we are as a country. That nature, that idea of fair play, and that we like each other, we can disagree, we can agree to disagree. I think that we're in that scenario. It's possible we're setting up some kind of, not armed, but a form of Canadian civil war. Anyone disagree with me?
Well, it doesn't have to be armed. You can vote on it like Quebec did in the 90s, right? And that's what is the talk is in Alberta. And I'm not predicting that it'll happen. But I'm telling you, I've lived here 25 years and I've never heard as much talk about separatism and starting a new country. And because it's easy in Canada, you just have a little referendum, and if you decide to leave, you leave, right? There doesn't have to be anybody pointing guns at each other to do it.
It ain't that easy to set up a country.
No, yeah, exactly.
Well, no, it's not. It's absolutely not.
Yeah, you're not just a country.
Legally, I don't even know where you start.
Legally speaking, in 1995, that's what Quebec tried to do, right? They thought having a referendum and deciding it themselves was sufficient, but there was the reference to the Supreme Court that basically said, no, if any of the provinces want to leave our confederation, they do need to negotiate with the rest of the country. So there is a mechanism in place now, or at least some rules that, you know, there would need to be a negotiation.
Sure. But yeah, they want Alberta to take their portion of the debt and all sorts of, you know.
Yeah, there's there would need to be some kind of agreement.
Hopefully we don't get there.
Hopefully we don't get there, but quite frankly, no province in this country is viable as an independent nation. I mean, even Quebec was talking about sovereignty association, which meant they got to run things the way they wanted, but they still got goodies from, you know, the nation next door, Canada. There's no province in this country that can form its own country. It is just absurd as a notion. It sounds popular, and it certainly helps focus people's anger. And I understand the anger in the oil patch. I understand the anger of anybody, any group of people, any community, where they see their economy shrinking. And they say, somebody, please do something about it. Because everybody would like to believe that there's a magic wand somewhere that somebody either can wave. Well, and there's issues with that too. There's issues with indigenous groups. There's issues. I mean, it ain't that easy. For every problem, there is an answer which is easy. There's a solution which is both easy and wrong. And the idea that we can just build more pipelines. It's not that easy.
But how, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost, I feel like we're, I feel like our whole nation is just, we're like, we've just been so manipulated and controlled by the Americans all these years too. Like, that's, you got Irving Oil that's out on the East. That's, and I mean, we all hear about all the importing of oil when we're a country that produces enough oil to support ourselves. Like, how was there not a pipeline built to the East 10, 20, 30 years ago? I'm talking like even conservative governments along the way. And how did it end up like this, that we've got enough oil to support ourselves, but we never spread it to the East so that we weren't importing it?
There's no question that pipelines and other methods of distributing the oil should have been dealt with before.
This is
one of those issues that governments kick the can down the road as far as they can.
Well, we build all they don't pipelines to deal the south.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look in Ontario, previous governments before the Wynne government kicked the can down the road as far as dealing with the power grid and things of that nature. And Kathleen Wynne, as premier, said, well, look, I'm going to be the one to stand up and say, we're not kicking the can down the road anymore. We're going to solve this problem. We're going to deal with the realities of the situation and stop putting it off. And she got the shit kicked out of her for doing that. And, you know, City of Toronto, the situation with social housing is a disaster because they kept kicking it down the road because no one wanted to invest the money that's necessary to fix the stuff as it goes along. And so now it's just an untenable situation, and the money that's needed to spend would raise taxes, and people are furious. Politicians have a history, no matter where they are, of kicking the can down the road and saying, we'll deal with it, or somebody else will deal with it down the road. We're in, you know, and this is where the road ends in some respects. But I just wonder if with the tone, I worry actually that with the tone and the rancor that has happened during this campaign and with the comportment of the conservative campaign, and the rhetoric of Andrew Scheer and the lack of facts that he's comfortable with. I just wonder, when you take something, when the conservatives are able to take something as relatively minor, quite frankly, as SNC-Lavalin was, and turn it into Hillary's emails, and turn it into something that is, blow it into something that is much bigger than it really is, as far as its actual effect on the outcome of SNC-Lavalin's prosecution. When the conservatives are able to take that and blow it up out of proportion like that, and they're able to take a videotape of a kid being an asshole in high school and somehow allege that that's the same person today, years later, they're very capable of, if they don't get to form the government, of continuing this rancor, ramping up the rancor. And I'm afraid that we're going to see the social fabric unravel. Ishak, can you see that possibly happening?
I think, I would add that also, I think the media has done a good job at helping that kind of narrative play out. But
in other words, the media has done a lousy job.
Yeah, they've done a lousy job. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the media has done
a terrible job. I would agree.
The media has, we've been so ill-served by the media during this election. That's why when we talk about education and educating people, people don't trust the media, and the media they do trust is not trustworthy.
They don't know who to believe anymore.
Well, and the truth is that people have always wanted to believe what they wanted to believe. So the media, and also, listen, to give them some sympathy, it's a dying industry that has not been able to adapt because everybody seems to want everything free. And things cost money, like reporters and buildings and, you know, journalism. So they're
chasing. And they want
chasing,
it now. And
they're chasing the journalism.
The 24-hour news cycle.
They're starving. They're, you know, basically the journalism has been starving in this country for a few years, and the conservatives were throwing them red meat, and they were just like rabid dogs eating it. I understand that they're trying to save their jobs. They're trying to save their industry. And they'll sell their soul to do it. That's why I think, and I'm concerned, and does anybody else here share my concern that if the conservatives win what is normally considered a minority government And in a normal situation where they would be asked first to form a government, if that doesn't happen, is anybody else afraid that we're going, the ugliness that we've seen during this writ period is just going to get worse? And where does it end? Is Stuart, are you worried about it, or do you think it'll all work out?
I think it gets worse regardless of what this outcome. I don't think things get better under a Trudeau or a Liberal government, or a Trudeau or a Conservative Scheer government, just because that's just it's we've got too much momentum now.
But the temperature will turn. I mean, elections, the temperature's always turned up during elections. It's a compressed period of time when a lot has to get communicated and a lot is on the line. If the Liberals form a minority, as Ishad said, the Conservatives will still be mad, but they'll understand, okay, we didn't win the required number of seats, and the temperature will cool.
There's a temperature cools, but I think the net temperature rises every time there's an election now. Like even after the cooling period, it doesn't bring it lower or to the same level it was before the election, because it's just stuff's already been said. Even if Trudeau does win a minority and gets to stay as prime minister, we've seen him in blackface like a couple of times. Like you can't put that back in the box.
Oh, for crying out loud. What? You can't put it back in the box, but it was years ago.
Or should I say in the lamp? Because I gotta keep it in
Stuart,
the theme.
Stuart.
I couldn't help myself.
Okay, Stuart.
Stuart,
did you never do anything that when you were a teenager or a young adult, because 29, as far as I'm concerned, anybody who thinks that 29 is actually a mature adult either hasn't reached it yet or doesn't remember what it was like to be 29. Do you have nothing in your past that you regret?
Oh, loads. But like, okay. It's like, that's the thing is, but I'm not saying that he can't govern anymore, but Canadians will never be able to unsee that picture. So that's now part of the whole conversation.
Oh, absolutely. He's now a human being. He's now a human being and not a messiah.
Yeah, but it's also politics. So now that's going to be an attack line and a dig at him. And then, so I don't like there, I think there are cool down periods after the election, but I think things just sort of keep ramping up now. And I mean, I don't see that there's like a civil war of any kind coming. I don't think
Canadians... you don't see if the Conservatives get the most number of seats but aren't asked to form a government, you don't see the temperature rising exponentially. What about you, Steve Cole?
Oh, well, yeah, like I said earlier, I mean, that's going to piss people off if the party that got the most seats and you voted for that party and for whatever reason with coalitions, your party isn't running the country anymore. It'll blow a lot of people's minds, really, because like Isha said that we haven't seen that since 1919,
which means that few Canadians alive have ever seen it. Let's face it. And those
that's 100 years ago.
Yeah.
100 years.
Yeah. And those that did see it, probably their memory isn't as sharp as it was once.
No, but at the same time, you know, I'm surrounded by rednecks out here, right? Like, and we're not all rednecks. We're all, you know, there's gay conservatives, there's conservatives of every race and religion. It's in all parties, right? There's every aspect of all parts of Canadians all voting for the different parties and stuff like that in these elections. And on the Twitter, oh my god, the way everybody talks, that like if your party isn't going to win, you know, if the Conservatives win, things are still going to be fine, right? If the Liberals win, things change slightly. A lot of it's social type things that get brought in and stuff, but it's I'll tell you one thing about conservatives is we all get sick of everybody saying that we're all homophobic and racist and stuff like that.
Well, I think that currently the party called the Conservative Party of Canada is representing itself very poorly Scheer is homophobic.
Like he hasn't said he won't gay marriage has been legal in Canada for 15 years now or whatever. Stephen, there was conservatives in power. Nobody's taken that away. And he has said that's nothing's going to change, right? Like people fail to acknowledge the fact about how far we've come as a society.
Yeah. Like, but you know what, you know how far we haven't come for Scheer to have apologized for the inflammatory and insulting things he said about gay marriage and about gay people. So it's, well, I think the majority
this, this
of conservatives.
This was when they were debating the gay marriage thing, right?
It doesn't matter. You apologize. Said... You apologize. If you don't still feel that, you apologize. But I think the majority of conservatives are fine people. I think the Conservative Party, the Progressive Conservative Party before that, was a very important institution and contributed greatly to the formation and development of this country. I think we've had some fine conservative prime ministers. I think most people that call themselves conservative are probably small C conservative, largely fiscal conservatives, not social conservatives. I think that conservatives, the Conservative Party is not filled and exclusively homophobic, racist, misogynist. No, that they're not. However, misogynists and racists and homophobes almost all consider themselves conservatives. And Andrew Scheer in the Conservative campaign hasn't wanted to say anything that might get those people not excited enough to vote for them. That's the problem. And if you've got an issue with the way that conservatives are being portrayed, part of that issue is with the leadership of the Conservative Party and how they've chosen to prosecute this this campaign and the period before it. But I agree with you.
Like,
no,
all it takes is
conservatives
an apology,
are not all bigots. That's an absurd. It's an absurd notion. Human beings are all complicated human beings. And even
well, if you're
comfortable about some about certain things or new things make them uncomfortable, doesn't mean they hate. Doesn't mean they want these people to go away. It just means that they're just not comfortable, and in time they probably will be. Nobody but me, I guess, is practically terrified that if the Liberals don't win a minority, we're going to wind up in a situation where people, where things are just going to get worse as far as people sniping at each other.
I'm definitely concerned. I mean, I think because it is uncharted territory, and because, you know, there is a sense, as Steve C was saying, that, you know, there are people out in Alberta who, and other parts of the country, you know, who feel alienated and, you know, who might find this a coalition type approach illegitimate. And, you know, I mean, certainly there is a concern there. But at the same time, I think it will also depend on how the coalition would communicate their coalition. You know, like, I think the messaging will be really important. And we also have to remember that almost 70% of those who are being polled and so on want a progressive government, right? So there are a lot of Canadians who may be on board. Now, some may not, even some progressives may think it's not cool, but there will be a significant portion of Canadians who will be okay with it. So then it's just a matter of, you know, the ones who feel disenfranchised, you know, how are they going to take it, right? And I am concerned, sure, but you know what, things will unfold the way they do. Someone's going to be really unhappy. There's going to be a group of people who are going to be really unhappy no matter what the outcome is after Tuesday. But whether that's going to be attributed to the coalition idea or not, I guess, remains to be seen.
I remember, and this is burned in my brain, the last time that the coalition was floated to defeat Harper, which we spoke about earlier in the show, with Dion talking to the Bloc and then talking to the NDP. And they, you know, there was serious talk that Harper was going to lose the confidence of the House and that Dion would take over as prime minister. I remember a close relative, who is not politically sophisticated at all. All she kept saying is, well, why did I vote? Why did I vote then if my vote doesn't count? Because the people I voted for who were the government are not the government anymore. It can just be taken away from them. And no matter how many times we tried to sit down and explain to her what the process was and what the legalities and stuff was, all she would, at the end of it, all she would do is press reset and say, what did I vote for then? Why did I vote? If my vote doesn't count because it didn't, because the people I voted for got the most seats, but now they're not going to be the government. I think about that. And that was at a time when we were still relatively sane before, the Trump tornado And American Osmosis reached us here from all the enmity that's going on in the U.S. I just think we're in for some interesting times unless we get a result that we have experienced before and understand and can be comfortable with. But we'll see what happens, won't we? I want to thank our panelists for joining us. Steve Cole, thank you for bringing, as you said, the average Joe, the everyday
Western Canada representative
perspective, because not enough programming includes that kind of perspective. And I appreciate you having the courage to come forward and express your views, knowing that, you know, you're on a show with somebody who's a Harvard grad. But you know what?
That's only because you mentioned it. Maybe next time don't mention it.
No, but you know what? The point is,
that's good.
Everybody's opinion matters because it's all part of what we build as a society. Everybody's opinion has got to matter. So, Steve, I really appreciate you volunteering, coming forth, and expressing yourself in as honest a manner as you have. And I think that your defense of the oil patch and of the province of Alberta is perhaps long overdue in media. I think it may give some people listening something to think about. And I appreciate you representing that. And we may talk about this as a topic on its own sometime in the future, and I hope you'll be part of that. So thank you. Stuart Benson,
thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me again.
And thank you for this for not introducing any conspiracies about people being killed in jail this time around.
Being a good and boy.
His bailiwick. Okay, the truth is you only did it once, but I pick on him.
Stuart, I did bug you for a while before you finally gave in, so you've earned it.
What did I give in on?
Well, you let me talk about it on the pod, so that was.
Oh, that's right. That's
that was
right.
Your give.
Yeah, it was. I got tired of hearing about it. I figured let's let him talk; it'll be done with. But thank you, Stuart, thank you for participating. And we'll hear you on other bullpens and Rock'em Sock'em Politics, other shows here on FU Politics on Fund the FU Network, and Ishat Reza. Thank you for bringing the historical perspective. I could hear you typing a bit during, doing some research during the show, which helped us out in contextualizing what we may be facing and what is legal and what is not legal. And thank you for your show. Matter of fact, with Ajay, with Professor S, where you address some issues that. I look at the titles sometimes and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I've always wondered that too. But why has nobody ever talked about it? You guys talk about it on Matter of Fact. So I encourage people, whether you're an iTunes subscriber, whether you're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, there's so many of them. Wherever you get your podcasts, go to FU Politics, find in our list of shows Matter of Fact, and listen to Ishat and Professor S, because you will learn something, but you won't feel like you're being lectured to. And that is something that I think the mainstream media still hasn't got a handle on how to do. So Ishat, thank you very much for participating.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. And thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider supporting us. Be a subscriber. $1 a month is all it takes. $5 a month is great. More than that, we're swimming. But we are trying to compete against major multi-billion-dollar conglomerates to bring media to people that they can understand and spoken to or spoken about in language they can understand. So we're at patreon.com/FU Network TV. If you just want to give us a one-time support, you can do it through PayPal, and that is through our email address, funetworktv@gmail.com. Please consider us. We do appreciate all your support. And again, I don't want to brag. Oh, who am I kidding? Sure I do. FU Politics, in a short amount of time, shot to the top of the iTunes charts, like,
Ow!
Five. in the politics, the various politics categories that seem to change every other day. But that's because people, Canadians, want to hear people talking in ways that they understand and breaking issues down in ways they understand, rather than turning on the television or other podcasts where people just want to show off how smart they are and how big the words are they can use. So thank you, everybody. Please remember to vote on Monday. If you think that you're going to send the government a message by not voting, the message you're sending is, hey, ignore me. Because all parties see when you don't vote is you're one less person they have to convince. And believe me, they don't shed any tears when you don't show up. So please look very seriously at the policies of the various parties. Look apart. This is not a tale of two men right now. It is, but it shouldn't be. It's about visions of Canada. And no party is going to have your exact vision of Canada. But look at them and see which one you're more comfortable with, which one more aligns with your values. Please do some research, because otherwise you do research and look into these issues and go in and vote. And then somebody else who's done no research whatsoever goes in and votes based on the color of somebody's sign. And your votes both count the same. I would like both of those votes to be informed. So please go look for some sites that are relatively not biased, or look for biased sites on both sides. But make up your own mind, investigate. This is your future. And it counts more than just what's going to happen in the next 4 years, if the government lasts 4 years, because those foundations that are set there can sometimes affect us for decades to come. So please vote. And thank you for listening. I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been the No Bullpen on FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network.
This is Fun, the FU Network.